Hey, everybody, it's on the Charlie Kirk Show, Thought Crimes with Blake and the team. You guys are going to love this episode. Make sure, I want to draw your attention to make sure you get your tickets to our People's Convention in Detroit, Michigan. It's tpaction.com, which, by the way, tpaction.com needs to be your starting point to get involved, become a volunteer this election cycle. The People's Convention in Detroit, Michigan, by the people, for the people. We have President Donald Trump, Vivek Ramaswamy, Dr. Ben Carson, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump Jr., Tulsi Gabbard, Governor Kristi Noem, Candace Owens, and more. That is tpaction.com/peoples. Check it out today. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com.
They are counting on your surrender. If you give up, they win. But what if we look back and we realize we were just inches away from victory, and that's when we decided to give up?
Join us and thousands of American patriots for the summer convention that all are invited to.
You're going to hear how we're going to win in 2024.
With the biggest speakers in the movement, featuring President Donald J. Trump.
We're going to fight and we're going to win.
Charlie Kirk, Vivek Ramaswamy, Governor Kristi Noem, Dr. Ben Carson, Steve Bannon, Candace Owens, Lara Trump, Senator Rick Scott, Congressman Matt Gaetz, Benny Johnson, Jack Posobiec, and more. June 14th through 16th.
2024 is our final battle.
In Detroit, Michigan.
The great silent majority is rising like never before.
Join us for the People's Convention.
This is a new ball game, everybody. You send a message. We play to win.
Register now at tpaction.com/peoples.
Okay, everybody, happy Thought Crime Thursday. Tyler's here. No, he's not, actually.
Soon.
It's just Blake.
Soon.
He's been very busy, understandably. Blake is here. By the way, Blake's TikTok has taken off.
Oh, dear.
It is ascendant. Oh, by the way, you're getting a lot of dating resumes coming
out. Let's not talk about that.
Are you following up with them? And you got something?
Daisy. That's private. That's
Daisy.
Private information.
We got Daisy.
That is private information.
Jack? Are you back from Europe? That's the real question.
100% back. What an incredible trip. Just hung out with, like, you know, it's amazing when you're in Eastern Europe, you don't have to dodge bullets. You don't have to dodge people. Still boneless. Just posted this video from the New York subway of this guy just unconscious and publicly urinating all over the New York City subway. And it's amazing that videos like this just don't seem to exist anywhere in Eastern Europe at all. So, yes, civilization still does exist. You just have to fly a little bit to get there.
Did you go to Africa?
I went to Africa. I did. We went to Morocco.
Okay, that is Africa. So what are all the places in Europe you went to?
This time around, we went to Hungary, we went to Romania, we went to Madrid, and then we had like a long layover, like a one-day layover in Morocco.
It's pretty impressive. Have you been to Morocco?
I have not.
Did you go to Casablanca?
You know what's great about Morocco?
Huh.
We went to Casablanca.
So California said they were totally going to build a high-speed rail, and
still hasn't
there
happened.
Was some French or Japanese company that came in and was going to build it and help them. And they wait around for a few years while California tries to get its act together. And finally they say, this state is never fixing itself. We're going somewhere that's way more functional. So they went to Morocco. And Morocco's built this big high-speed rail line in the time span where California has still built no rail whatsoever.
Yeah, it's we actually asked about that when we were there, and apparently it's not it doesn't go to like every city, but it's between like the two main cities.
Tyler's here.
Tyler, what's up, guys?
You were the star of our show last week. We were talking about
Tyler.
You.
Let us see your facial tats. Where are your facial tats?
I'm getting the teardrop.
Based. Well, you, hey, those teardrops are earned. Teardrops are earned.
I'm going to say this is we're ready to take on whatever we need to take on here, which is, you know, we're in crazy times.
Yes, so. We are. We don't want to cause any more problems for Tyler because we're dealing with bad people. Okay, let's get into the first topic. Blake, what is it?
They're banning the Bible, Charlie. Congress just went and they voted on a law that says if you own a Bible, if you read a Bible, if you look at a Bible, they are going to cut your head off. That's what the law says. Okay, I am exaggerating a bit.
I've had a very eventful day.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it. And so for those who haven't been following the news too much, so big picture, there's a lot of campus protests against Israel. A lot of them have had a very anti-Semitic flavoring to them, to say the least. There's a lot of extremely angry liberals doing what extremely angry liberals do, which is be disgusting. And understandably, we think those people are gross. We're all like cheering on the cops when they decide to, you know, knock down their lame tent cities or arrest them for taking over buildings. But the right is doing that thing where they get a good idea and then they goof up their response to it. And so what Congress is doing, the U.S. House, is they decided to pass a bill attacking anti-Semitism. And as is often the case with Congress, they didn't read it. It's like the terms and conditions on your iPhone. They just don't, you know, you just go to the bottom and click, yeah, I agree.
It's H.R. 690.
H.R. 6090. 6090. And what H.R. 6090 does is it passes a formal definition for anti-Semitism, and it instructs the Department of Education to use this definition for the purposes of enforcing civil rights law. So we have civil rights law that say you can't discriminate on the basis of race or sex or skin color or religion and other factors if you are a school that is getting federal money. And so what they say is, obviously, that would apply like anti-Jewish discrimination. And so what this law is essentially saying is this is the official definition of anti-Jewish discrimination that the Department of Education should use. And the definition that they are using is really, really broad. It is,
yes,
a definition created by a group called the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, and it's called the Working Definition of Anti-Semitism. And this working definition of anti-Semitism, it includes some things we would all agree both are anti-Semitic and should not be allowed. Like, you can't, like, it includes assisting in violence against Jewish people.
That's already illegal.
Of course, that's already illegal. So that's part of it.
We have it state, local, and federal crimes that.
So it's one of these things where, why do you need to pass it except to expand it? But other definitions that are included here as examples. And this law, what it does is it says it includes the definition and the examples that this group has given that you should look towards. And so, for example, one of them is claiming that the existence of a state of Israel is a racist endeavor, which some people say because it's a country that defines itself as Jewish. It gives citizenship to Jewish people automatically, but not other groups of people. So it's a group that it's a state that defines itself by a particular nationality. So they'll say that's racist. Or they'll say drawing comparisons between contemporary Israeli policy and that of the Nazis. As Michael Knowles explained on our show, no one knows how to compare any bad thing or thing they say is bad to anything except the Nazis. It is the Godwin's law. Everything gets to, compared to the Nazis. But now they're saying that is anti-Semitic. And so what that means is if a school, like if a professor at a school does this, or if a group at a school does this and doesn't get punished, or if employees of a school are doing this, it would apparently violate civil rights law, and then the government can come in and sue you, or they have to have lawsuits go your way, go towards someone if they sue over this. And it just, it adds to the arsenal of things the federal government can do to mess with you.
So, let's play the law's author, bill's author, which actually there's a lot of updates around this, and we covered it earlier today. There's a lot of updates here. This is Mike Lawler, moderate from New York Republican. It is his bill, Play Cut 102.
Hey, everyone. It's Congressman Mike Lawler. I just want to say how proud I am that my bill, the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, just passed the House of Representatives 320 votes to 91. This bill has broad bipartisan support and will begin the process of cracking down on the anti-Semitism that we've seen run rampant on college campuses all across America. This is a big day and a big win. Now we got to get it through the Senate and signed into law. I look forward to working to get this across the finish line.
There's so much wrong with this. First of all, if you really want to get to the core of anti-Semitism, defund the colleges. That's a separate issue. Secondly, why is Congress in the business of policing speech? But I want to just get to two elements here. The first of which is that I started to call out a lot of lawmakers on this, and their response was like, oh, the Senate's not going to pass it. It was a show vote. And we now have intel from two U.S. senators. Chuck Schumer is accelerating this to the Senate floor, that he is now top priority for the Senate. So all the Republicans that voted for it, they did not read this. I could tell you after a whole day of talking to several lawmakers, they did not read this. Third element, Eli Crane has come out publicly and privately, right? He met with publicly. Mike Johnson right before this passed. He was like, bro, like, I know we're not on great terms. There's a huge problem in this bill. Can we get it fixed? Like,
he went with three other congressmen.
That's right. And he was like, yo, I totally understand, like, a show vote. Like, we understand. In Congress, there are show votes. It's just the way it is. Show vote. Like, resolutions are for that more than laws.
And Speaker Johnson took it and was like, yep. Good, we'll fix it.
And he said, we'll fix it, and he put it exactly as it's worded. So Speaker Johnson literally didn't listen to anything. So what is the main contention here?
So it's all the stuff we had, you know, listed above. That's already bad because it's like, okay, you can't criticize the Israeli government. You know, even if that's a bad criticism, we don't need a ban on criticizing a foreign country. But one of the things that's in it is it says, it mentions images associated with classic anti-Semitism, e.g., for example, claims of Jews killing Jesus.
So I want to get into this. So I talked to a very smart man who likes this bill, and he's a good friend. I'm not going to say who it is, but he's very well-studied, PhD, all that stuff. And he didn't like my tweet where I asked the question, and we actually came to a great agreement on the phone call where he said, Charlie, read the text over and over again. So let's read the text again. Using the symbols and images associated with classic anti-Semitism, for example, claims of Jews killing Jesus or blood libel to characterize Israel or Israelis. So he says this is essentially group guilting all current Israeli citizens for the death of Jesus. I said that's not what it says, though. And what I was able, I think, to come to some common ground with is I said, can you point to a time where the federal government has a statute where they do not pervert or contort what is on the laws of the books that come after the faithful? And I think the best example of this in modern times is Douglas Mackey. Look how Douglas Mackey is facing federal prison time for making a meme in the 2016 election.
Using the Ku Klux Klan Act.
Bingo. But that's important, though, because the Anti-Semitism Act sounds popular. Maybe 20 years from now, some Christian who's preaching 1 Thessalonians 2:14 is going to have his home raided. So I want to just say this. First of all, this was a show vote. And Mike Johnson screwed up a show vote. Here's usually what you do with a show vote. No teeth. We therefore say that anti-Semitism is wrong and bad, and we're going to establish a committee to look into it. Totally okay with that.
Yeah, I'm going to go further. I'm not okay with it. Show votes are dumb. Why did you have...
Well, they're dumb, but...
What?
They're,
well, we have 300 days in session over the course of a Congress?
Fair enough, but we wouldn't
and
go...
And you spent one of them on this?
We wouldn't go nuclear over a show vote. Okay?
True.
So you know what I'm saying?
I'm with Blake on this. I think it's like the waste of time stuff is like, why are we doing waste of time stuff?
No, I'm just... let me just kind of just say, if their defense, some of them, is, hey, you know, there's a lot of moderate members that wanted this. It's a show vote, no harm done. No. There actually is now harm done. And so Senator Roger Marshall, I want to get Jack in this in a second, from Kansas, has now tweeted out this, which is remarkable, which, by the way, goes to show the power of our program and social media. He says, the Holy Bible is the word of God. I believe in the sanctity of Scripture, and no person should change or alter those words. If this bill comes to the Senate floor as is, we will offer an amendment to honor the sanctity of Scripture. By the way, thank you, Senator Marshall, for that very clear tweet. I wish they would have read the bill before they actually passed it. Jack, I want to loop you in on this. Jack, it seems as if this also could be an indirect hit towards Vatican I Catholics. Jack, do you sense what I'm saying here, and can you kind of take it from there?
Yeah, so pre-Vatican I, there were continuous, and you still hear this in some TLM or traditional masses, within the Catholic Church, and not to get super into it, so Vatican I, or which there is no like Vatican I, but it's like pre-Vatican II, so pre-1960s, you would hear in a lot of Catholic churches the prayer for the conversion of the Jews. And so this would be a basic statement that the Jews rejected Jesus. This led to the crucifixion and the death of Christ. And then this is also something that Catholics pray for. And specifically, by the way, the conversion of the unfaithful Jews. And this was a common and regular, just regular prayer. And by the way, there was also a prayer for the conversion of pagans as well. And so let's say now that you're the FBI, which is already, as we know, using, I'm not even actually sure what justification they're using, but they're claiming, you know, potential for radical extremist plots in order to infiltrate using federal assets and informants into traditional Latin mass churches and traditional Latin mass services. Now, all of a sudden, you've got a new law that says, oh, perhaps we can shut down your church if we catch you praying this specific prayer, which, by the way, all Christians continuously pray for the conversion of everyone to Christ. That's sort of a basic tenet of Christianity. But if you use the wrong words, now the federal government can go after you.
Mm-hmm. Evidently. And so let's continue in here. So if you go, the definition gets worse and worse. And, you know, there's been a lot of emphasis, rightfully so, on the biblical part of this. But let's just talk to another one of here. If you now say that Jews are more loyal to Israel than to the priorities of Jews worldwide, then you're an anti-Semite. But I'm trying to understand, what if there's an Israeli citizen that is visiting America and is not an American citizen? Are you not allowed
to... Or, like, there are people in America who have been arrested and thrown in prison for spying on the U.S. on behalf of Israel. Like, I'm sorry. It is a fact of life. This happens with other countries. There are Chinese people who come to America, and they are more loyal to China. It's unfortunate. This is a real phenomenon. And to just say, like, categorically, you can't utter it or you'll be sued and you'll, like, get punished by the federal government, that's insane. It might be hurtful to say that to, like, a lot of random people, which is a thing that's done. It's not, it's an ugly behavior to do. But to say that it's illegal.
Or you're going to use the full force of the government. And here, I could just see how this is going to work. So now you have, let's just take Wyoming Catholic College. Okay, which is a really solid Catholic school. They haven't gone woke. Are they now going to get a letter from the Department of Education in the next year, 5 years, 10 years, where they're like, hey, can we see your missals? Can we, like, see what you're teaching in regards to, like, are you reciting hate speech in your liturgical?
And it doesn't even have to happen next year. What if it happens in 20
years?
Well,
that's the point of the KKK Act, is that they'll pass this stuff, put it on the shelf.
Next generation.
And they'll dust it off.
No.
More laws, the less justice. And we need to take a step back. Hate speech is not a thing. There's ugly speech. There's gross speech. But hate speech is a term that is inherently subjective. And the First Amendment protects all speech that doesn't call for violence. And honestly, outside of one of these examples on the International Holocaust Museum, which, by the way, memories, I'm sure they do great work, is like not like... Oh, the first one is this. If you call for the killing of Jews, that is direct incitement of violence. No one should support that. Okay. But then you go to the third entry point, accusing Jews as a people – I'm sorry, accusing Jewish citizens of being more loyal to Israel or the alleged priorities of Jews worldwide. How about this one? Applying double standards by requiring of it a behavior not expected or demanded of any other democratic nation. What does that even mean?
Referring to Israel. They'll always say Israel's held to a double standard that – they're expected to do things with regard to Palestine that the U.S. isn't expected to do, or China or Russia or any other country. They're not expected to do these things. So they say they're subject to a double standard. Maybe true. But again, you're now saying the federal government is going to police that people don't have the wrong opinions about a foreign government.
So, Tyler, help me understand the politics of this. Mike Johnson, he's up against the wall right now. He has to get Democrats to bail him out. He's facing a vote. He's facing a motion to vacate. The guy is not his popularity has gone by 20 points.
Yeah.
And he thinks it's a good idea to do this. Like, did he read the bill? Did Mike Johnson read the bill?
This is jumping the shark for sure. Like, if there is a classical definition of, like, trying to jump the shark. And this is what I think. And for those of our younger audience that don't know the Jumping the Shark reference, it was at the end of Happy Days. Again, this is American history, right? They put Fonzie on water skis and had him jump over a fake shark on the thing. That's where the term comes from. This is, I think, and this is what starts happening when you get desperate. You start doing weird stuff that you think is going to end up making you more popular and more protected. That's actually the opposite. It has the opposite effect, where it's like actually people are now looking at you even more. And I'm afraid now we've drawn more attention to him. The people who wanted to remove him as speaker to begin with are now more upset, right? So now this isn't helping at all. Like, why can't we just come together and do things that are going to be like bring the Republican caucus together? I don't know. Things that like are populist that are going to help us in the general election in 2024. I don't know. This does not appear to do those things.
And ironically, if you read the Babylonian Talmud, it says the idea that Jews killed Jesus is also found in Jewish religious literature. Did you know this? It's according to myjewishlearning.com. Now, I'm just saying.
Maybe I'm like really.
Did they cell phone where now you're not allowed to read from the Talmud? I'm just saying, like, if in Jewish folk literature, it says right here. Again, this is myjewishlearning.com. A teaching from year before 300 asserts that Jesus was put to death by a Jewish court for the crimes of sorcery and sedition. In standard texts of the Talmud from Eastern Europe or an American text that's simply copied from them, there's a blank space towards the bottom of that folio because its potentially offensive text was removed. The censorship may have been internal for self-protection or may have been imposed on the Jews by Christian authorities. In many new editions, in the Talmud, this passage has been restored. The Talmud's claim was that there was an event that took place on the eve of Passover is consistent with the chronology of the Gospel of John. In the Talmudic account, the Romans played no role in the death.
I mean, even in the Bible, like what it essentially is they accuse him of blasphemy, and then they go to the Romans and they say he's a blasphemer, and Pontius Pilate says, I don't care. And they say, well, he's also undermining Caesar, and he's still kind of like, eh, that's sus. But then they basically say, you might get executed, and so he's, and they kind of throw a temper tantrum, and so he washes his hands of it, as it were.
That's right.
And
they say, give us Barabbas.
Give us Barabbas.
Is, you know what that means in Greek? I believe it means the son of man or the son of God. Abba, father, Barabbas. I have to look that up. What does Barabbas mean in Greek? Let me see. Son of the master, son of the father. Yeah, I was right.
Yeah, and so it's almost, the Bible thing stands out, but we do need to emphasize, you can't fix the Bible part. You can't just throw in the religious scripture is protected here and make this bill good. This is still a bill that goes way too far. And what's sad about it, big picture, is this issue should be a huge winner for us because you have obnoxious, left-wing, violent,
yes,
jerkwad students at Columbia basically rioting to support a terrorist group. And their main opponents are a bunch of jerkwad academia heads who are also terrible. And we basically could just watch them rip each other to shreds and then send in the cops if they get too violent and like arrest some people.
Well, I want to get Jack in on this. Jack, if there was ever a time for us to be lazy and do nothing, we should have just took like the week off. Like, if there's ever a time for them to like take a break, Mike Johnson would be like, just go home to your districts. Like, just go home.
It's, funny enough, in ancient China, okay, they used to have this belief called Wu Wei. And it sort of means do nothing. And this kind of came about like in the 13th century when the Chinese dynasties were pretty much running all of Asia. And they were pretty much the top of the heap when it came to Asian cultures. And so the idea was that we've got the empire right where we want it. So just do nothing. Don't make any big moves and we'll stay winning. And this was pretty much fine until the British showed up with their gunboats. And this is kind of, then the Chinese also have this other ancient saying, don't interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake. The worst possible thing you could do, total break of rules with radicals, total break of the basics of information warfare, is that if your enemy is fighting your other enemy, there and themselves, essentially, if the snake that you are fighting is eating its own tail, don't step in and try to save the snake. And what you're doing is, and what the Republicans have done here, is they've committed a massive strategic blunder, as usual, where they're moving the focus of attention away from the protests and onto themselves. Now, fortunately for the Republicans, these protests, which have descended into riots at this point, are so incredibly violent that it's kind of hard for the media to get away from it. And even like local media and mainstream media are broadcasting these images. And so humans are visual creatures. We are going to remember these images. It's a complete and massive optics fail for the Democrats, normies, centrists, independents. Everyone is turning against this thing, which, by the way, if you're actually for the people of Gaza, is probably, you know, not a good thing for you, because this is just going to help the Israelis with their with their public opinion, because people are going to say, I don't want to be involved with the guys supporting the, you know, these protests. And so it's ridiculous to me that the never bet against the Republicans when it comes to snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. But that's exactly what they've done here. Massive goal.
Well, and I want to bring this point up, too, because it's like, this is, maybe I'm just super innocent, but this whole thing is just like so.
Tyler's the most innocent in the world, ladies and gentlemen.
Astounding to me is this entire thing about, you know, taking such offense that, you know, the Jewish population was not a big fan of Jesus and that they were responsible for his death. It wasn't just him, but it was the apostles they ran out after they crucified Jesus.
Oh, big time. Yeah, they ran him all over.
But James was killed. They had brought him forward to die. And then that's what made all the 12 apostles disperse. They left because they literally murdered James then after the crucifixion of Jesus. So, like, I think there's like a certain sensitivity, I understand, around, you know, Christian Jewish relations around the topic of Jesus and and what had the events that happened around that. But, like, again, saying these things, and to your point back, Charlie, is like, you come into this whole thing, I'm just like so astounded that this is, I don't think the average person walking on the street would be offended by any of that conversation, but now that makes you a target by the government is one of the scariest things ever that you could ever, you know, put into writing.
I get frustrated because when you think of the big picture of how did this come about, and it's that, it's like we have bad ideological formation on high-level Republicans because they haven't had the process thought of, yeah, we've been defending free speech for the last 6 years. You know, we've been worried about censorship online. We've been worried about censorship on campus. We've been worried about Democrats wanting to roll back all these speech things and putting our guys in jail. And then, you know, the neurons didn't fire right when this came up to go like, wait, now we restrict speech that now good what like why what? Didn't you this come together for
where
you
have
guys?
You been this whole
yes.
time like, it's just like what have you guys not
don't
learned
get it
whole process
yeah and they constantly talk a good game on campus free speech. You're like, well, not actually at all. not all speech is what they're saying.
Yes. And just, oh, suddenly we came up with this thing. Oh, we're gonna roll back speech really bad. And what stinks is I can kind of tell, like, they just are being dumb and they'll figure it out. But imagine you're, one of the centrists that we're trying to win over. I think a lot of those people will look and say, the Republicans are full of crap. They're just huge hypocrites. They never cared about this in the first place. And the answer is, a lot of people like us do care about it. And I think even a lot of those guys care about it. And they're dumb and kind of weak and they don't pay attention. And they thought they could get an easy win. And this is another problem I think a lot of the right has, is they always want to just go for some easy win that doesn't really require doing much of anything. And so this guy came along and said, oh, Democrats are being dumb, we can just pass this 5-page bill and it'll show that we're totally way better than the left, and now all of the Jews will vote for Trump this fall and it'll be great. And just no, it doesn't work
that
way.
And then Schumer
way.
Calls the bluff and is going to put it into law.
Yeah, but Charlie, like, this is what I don't understand. This is, like, what I really do not get. Is, like, I totally expect this out of, like, a Lawler, right? And out of a New York Republican to, like, come up with this idea.
Yeah.
Right? This is, like, a very standard, like, New York Republican idea, right?
Yeah, let's censor our opponent.
Well, it's just, like, you know, try to score points, you know, and whatever. And I totally get the arguments and all that. Like, Republicans are winning over Jews in big numbers. And so I understand getting, like, easy wins politically, even if they're cheap wins. Like, that's what that's like the New York Republican Party's, like, whole, like, mantra right now. But, like, Speaker Mike Johnson is literally, what is he, a Baptist out of Louisiana?
Southern Baptist, yep.
He's a Southern Baptist. Like, how are you not, like, pausing for a moment, like, calling, like, your own people?
No, but here's what's amazing is he was warned by Eli Crane and others and fixed this. He's like,
but
yeah.
Eli Crane's not, like the Baptist extraordinary. No, like, I don't know his religious
background. There's no rush. This isn't the government shuts down unless ban portions of the Bible.
Yeah, but doesn't he have a religious leader that he looks to that he could pick up the phone and be like, hey,
well, no, that's the thing, is
a bunch of congressmen brought me this. How do you think you would feel?
A lot of pastors have been calling me saying they love this bill.
Are you really?
Why?
Like Baptists?
Just all across the spectrum, yeah. They think it's great. They think that we have to protect the Jews, and if it means forsaking free speech, so be it. Not all, but some. I've gotten 10 or 12 pretty...
forsaking the Bible?
They say it's never going to happen, that it's misreading it. The devil's advocate is that the Bible is constitutionally protected, and you can't, you know...
Wait, I just saw these same guys. Is it the same guys that got mad about the Trump Bible?
No, it's separate ones. But I will say this, though. My argument to them is, wait, are memes constitutionally protected? Because Douglas Mackey's going to jail for creating a political meme during an election campaign, dusting off a 150-year-old law. So don't give me this, like, the courts are going to save us in the end because the law is sloppily written. Nonsense,
they're not.
Right? No. I think that is so insane. Right? I think it's shallow. It is. And by the way,
The 14th Amendment says we all get equal protection under the law. And then they just went and, like, made it so you could discriminate against white people for the last 50 years.
Of course.
And the courts haven't stopped
that.
Yeah,
we can trust the law. Laws will never be abused against conservatives.
Especially the
D.C.
circuit.
Well, no, I will say that there has been, this is very interesting, and I have to get to one of our partners here. The support amongst the conservative movement, amongst influencers, Glenn Beck, Ben Shapiro, Matt Walsh, it's been pretty unanimous. There's very few people that are saying, like, this is a great idea. Like, I think we set the tone on that pretty early. It was like Matt Walsh and us out of the gate, and all of a sudden people, like, read the bill. They're like, yeah, this is crazy. Because, again, show votes happen all the time. They're nothing. They just kind of cast them aside. This one is not a show vote. This is real teeth. And Schumer is like, oh, okay.
And now it just stinks because
of course Schumer
either they
wants
have to
do it.
Pass this crappy law.
Which they might.
Or they'll back off and, you know, the Democrats will spin it as, you know, to make Republicans look
of
like they
course.
Don't prepare. They're dumb. The Senate is anti-Semitic. Like, they can do all sorts of silly stuff with it.
Yeah, it's just the whole thing is just so poorly concocted. And I think, Blake, you make a great point here. What's the rush? Why couldn't Mike Johnson just be like, hey, let's wait a week. Let me make some calls, read this out. Let's kind of look at all the potential attacks here. No, and by the way, this is very important. Most bills, 90% of all bills, go through a committee process. Do you know this didn't go through committee markup?
Of course it did.
Mike Johnson bypassed the committee process. In a committee where bills usually become law, someone would have said, wait a second, this doesn't seem right, and you debate and you go through it. They just said, no, this is so important, this is so urgent, that we're going to just throw this on the House floor and give Joe Biden's Department of Education the ability.
No reading time. And the ones who did.
And he also promised 72 hours. Mike Johnson broke another yet promise, which again is a theme. Remember when Mike Johnson said, I'm going to restore the 72-hour rule? Members literally had like 6 hours to read this and to think about it and call experts on it. He just bulldozed that.
Does the Bible say anything
And then they still
about,
showed up.
Does the Bible yes. say anything about like promises and telling the truth?
Well, you have to look beyond the Decalogue. Do not give false witness or false testimony.
Man.
And so here's the other
thing. But by the way, that's just like a repetition with Mike Johnson. It's 1, 2, 3, 4.
And then all the Republicans who then oppose it now have to come out and give statements. So now they're wasting time putting out statements about why they didn't vote on it, what they had to do.
Yes.
Like, can we not have our Republicans working on things that we need to get done?
How about, like, I don't know, the border?
Yeah, like, can we not just, like, do things that are helpful?
But, you know, it's really interesting. This is such a good conversation. The media, the way they've been covering it, you would anticipate Republicans are anti-Semitic. The headlines have actually been largely sympathetic to our argument, believe it or not. The New York Times, like, I mean, if you just look at it, you look at some of the articles, they're kind of saying, like, right-wingers caution about this bill that is really poorly written. It's like the New York Times article here, like, that's not like a normal New York Times article at all.
They don't know what to do because the radical progressives hate it, right?
For obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons. They want to use it to attack Mike Johnson to divide us more. It's like, again, this is the political, you know, textbook political stuff that like is like bad leadership. This is
for example, Newsweek says Republicans voting for bill that could make Bible illegal outrages MAGA. Raw Story, which is super left wing, fix this. House Republicans spread theory Mike Johnson just outlawed the New Testament. No, this is my favorite. New York Times. Bill to combat anti-Semitism on campus prompts backlash from the right. Pretty fair. I mean, like,
that's pretty straight up.
The usual headlines would be the right's descent into like Jew hatred. Yeah. It's like
Christian nationalism.
No, exactly.
Christian nationalism rears its ugly head in opposition to the Jewish bill.
I want to really quickly go to one of our partners here. PDS Debt. Getting in debt is so easy. Getting out? Well, look, the system is set up so we don't. The anxiety, the stress can be soul-crushing. I get all of that. I'm here to say you don't have to go at it alone. There's a way out. Help is available thanks to PDS Debt. PDS Debt has customized options for anyone struggling with credit card, personal loans, collections, or medical bills. If you are making payments every month on your debt and your balances aren't going down, this program is for you. PDS Debt provides options that consolidate your debts into one low monthly payment. Everyone with $10,000 or more in eligible debt qualifies, and there is no minimum credit score required. Bad and fair credit accepted. Save thousands in interest and fees. Pay off your debt in a fraction of the time. PDS Debt is a top-rated company on Google and has an A-plus rating on the Better Business Bureau. I know people think very highly of this company. So PDS Debt cares about helping you get out of debt. Check out all the reviews and see how many mention PDS Debt employees by name. It is remarkable. Get a free debt analysis right now at pdsdebt.com/charlie. It only takes 30 seconds. That's pdsdebt.com/charlie. pdsdebt.com/charlie. Let's just summarize this topic. It's such a good one. There's so much meat on this bone still. Do you have a thought, Blake?
It's just what I would urge all conservatives, especially nominal conservatives in Congress, to do is to remember that as conservatives, we care about ideas, we care about principles, and we care about the actual text of the Constitution for reasons above, like as a vehicle to obtain power. We actually like the Bill of Rights. So if someone says, yo, this bill might violate the Bill of Rights, you should at least take them seriously and read the text of the bill, especially if it's only 5 pages long.
So James Lindsay, who's a great friend, says this. IDK, who needs to hear this, but House Republicans did not just vote to make the New Testament illegal, but we're going to watch a lot of people get radicalized to believe they did. How should you respond to that, Blake?
I think there's this weird desire to downplay this when it's just obviously a bad bill. And is it likely that the worst possible outcomes will come to pass? No. Is there a risk? Does it make it easier for those bad outcomes to come to pass? Yes. And does it produce literally any upside otherwise? No. The best case scenario that they are selling us on then is that this is a symbolic bill. You should never. One, I don't think you should pass symbolic bills generally, but two, if you are, it should have a giant sign up top that says, this is purely symbolic does nothing.
By the way, that's what resolutions are.
That's what you have resolutions for.
Yes. A resolution has no teeth, by definition. You resolve to make a statement.
I think the outcome is most likely what you said, Charlie, which is like, this is gonna be ugly way later on.
Yes. So they'll put it into law, and then 10 years from now, it'll just be used on the shelf. Oh, we have that thing. Because more laws, less justice. They control who enforces the law. So they find someone who breaks it and go. Yeah, Blake.
We like to use Canada as an example of bad things that can happen. So in the 1980s, Canada passed their kind of new constitution, Charter of Rights and Freedoms, I think they call it. And I'm sure when they passed that, everyone was told this will not have any of those extreme outcomes you worry about. And in the early 2000s, they started using it to sue and prosecute pastors who opposed gay marriage and such. Like if they publicly read verses from the Bible that condemned homosexuality, they got in trouble. They were prohibited on distributing literature or preaching. And that's just a great example to go to of thing that was definitely never ever going to happen happened, and it just took 20 years. So what's America going to be like in 20 years? If you don't know, don't pass laws that can be used by those people.
Well, here's what I do know, is if the Democrats take over the presidency, they take over the Senate, and they take over the House, we're going to see things that are so ugly with the demolition of the Constitution, and all of these things are going to be used against that. We talk about this all the time with PPP stuff. Conservatives who took PPP money, I think they're going to have to live with that for the rest of their lives. Like yep. Literally, the Democrats are going to come after them. Democrats will come after you for every little thing, every large thing, and they're going to destroy the Constitution in the meantime. Because also, one of the benefits from going after people with little stupid stuff like this is that they can do big things in the background because our eyes taken off the ball, or they've sidelined our biggest voices.
Okay, let's get to the next topic here.
The good news coming from campus is frat boys, apparently. We have predicted that it is young men radicalized.
We've also witnessed it.
Yeah, we've witnessed it.
I've been telling you, Tyler, for a while.
Young men.
Big turning point action energy here.
If you're a 20-year-old young man today, you've spent your entire life basically being told all of America's problems are your fault. You're the worst thing in the world. You're an idiot in every single ad, if you're allowed in an ad at all. You're the villain of every movie. You're the villain of history. Like, you have to read all these books that just say you're the biggest piece of crap in the world. And it seems that it's finally boiled over. And we have young guys who are tired of being yelled at all the time. And they're doing, I don't know if we want to call it brave stuff, but it's very entertaining stuff. And
public.
Yes. And so we saw this recently right here at ASU, where the frat boys were employed to help clean out the attempted tent city to protest. And then we also had this very viral story. We have a clip from Fox News reporting on it. Let's play clip number 87.
One point yesterday in the quad, that flag was taken down and replaced by a Palestinian flag. And it was surrounded by, it looked like, about 100 of the pro-Palestinian activists. Well, shortly after that, the cops came in and they cleared those people out and they took down the flag and they put up Old Glory just as it had been. And look what happened.
Amazing. And that's in North Carolina.
And swing state.
So I want to just say this. We have been traveling the country, and Tyler knows this. When I do these Prove Me Wrong events, thousands of young frat boys will show up. They love our content. They love Turning Point USA. And I'm telling you, on the Turning Point Action side, we're going to have some big announcements in the fall, right, Tyler? We're going to be having ballot, bring your ballot events with frat boys, marching people with ballots in the midst of October in Arizona and in Wisconsin and in Michigan to get that frat boy energy. Literally, we have ideas because it's 75 feet. You can't campaign with a 75-foot perimeter. Is that right?
Of a polling place.
Of a polling place. Yep. Or a drop box, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to draw 100 feet outside of the drop box. And we'll just have an event with a bunch of young alpha men at ASU and be like, hey, come get a picture of Charlie or Don Jr. or Vivek and bring your ballot. If you bring a ballot, you get a picture and do that for 3 weeks straight.
Show up with your ballot.
If you want a great precedent here, have you ever heard of the Hard Hat Riot of 1970?
You sent it. It was in New York, right?
Yeah. So this is 1970. This is right after another big student protest. It was Nixon announced that he was bombing Cambodia in the Vietnam War. There were a ton of student strikes, student protests, student occupations. The Kent State shooting happens around now. And there's a major protest in New York City. And what happens is 1,000 demonstrators, or about a bunch of office workers and blue-collar workers, so guys wearing hard hats, show up with American flags chanting pro-USA slogans, and they get in a fight with all of the students, and Richard Nixon invites these hard hat guys to the White House, and 2 years later, he wins 49 out of 50 states. And then I assume everything worked out for him after that, and nothing bad happened to Nixon after that.
Jack, young men are going to save America. I believe politically this is a glitch in the polling matrix. We're seeing it in macro polling, Hill.com, young boys most conservative been in 50 years. We see this with micro experiences on campus. This is a huge deal. And if it manifests, Donald Trump does 5 or 6 points better in Dane County, Wisconsin, UW-Madison. If he does 5 or 6 points better at NAU, U of A, or ASU in Arizona, Joe Biden's going to have major problems.
Look, if you're the GOP right now watching this, you've got to go back. And like, I don't understand why the GOP stopped courting fraternities to begin with. This was something that the GOP did for years, by the way, even up through the 2000s, even back when I first started doing field work with Republican parties, that it was very clear that we would work with frats all the time to do stuff like this, including, by the way, voter registration and AB Chase, which is what ballot chasing kind of used to be called, AB Chase. And absentee ballot chasing. And so it's very clear this is a natural alliance. I mean, I kind of get it that Republicans became sort of not cool during the Bush years and neocons and sort of like the namby-pamby and just the physical swishiness and softness and fat-headed and fat-ideaed people of the neocons and like the Eric Erickson types just really kind of drove away a lot of the frat guys. That's something where this is an energy that Donald Trump has very much brought back. And if you're the GOP right now, you've got to be asking, what are the biggest fraternities on the biggest campuses in the swing states that I should be working out with? These are the guys that we should be working with to staff our field offices, come up with programs for them, give them credit, whatever it is that they need to get a leg up. This is a clear natural alliance. And if the GOP was smart, this is something they would automatically be tying into.
I totally agree. And so, Tyler, talk about politically. We're seeing this on the ground. This could be a major break for the Democrat Party.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that's the Democrats have been abusing us for some time.
Big time.
And for us is, we're on college campuses. You're seeing young people finally get to a point where they're like, wait, why am I a Democrat? Why am I sitting on the left? And you have a couple of different vectors that's happening. You have the pro-Israel piece, right? Because there's so many elements of liberal culture that have been pro-Israel. And now you've got this, like, the last 10 years, we've been part of this and really suppressing the anti-Israel on campus narrative. And so a lot of people are going like, wait, that's confusing. Then you have rappers coming out supporting Trump. You have RFK in the race, who right now is polling ahead of Joe Biden significantly with young people in the under 30 category. So you have this really, everything's coming together right now that's happening on campus with young people in particular. You have parents who are really concerned about their kids getting out of the house after they turned, 21, 22, getting out of college, that they don't want to bring them back in and have to have them within the household. So I think you have this coming together of like four or five different things that's actually culminating in a really bad scenario for Democrats. And so this is why I said, I tweeted out just this last week, I think they're going to, and they know number one, too, that we're actually figuring things out on the right in these key target states. They're going to have to do really radical, radical things between now and October.
Like what?
Well, I mean, I don't want to get into this. I'll let Blake get into speculation about how, Civil War is going to break out here, but because he's a big believer in it. But I mean, look, they're going to have to do
he
radical.
He just wants it to break.
They're going to have to do radical stuff to overcome not just one or two narratives, but like four or five narratives with their key target base. And I've been saying this a lot, and this is the reason why. And Jack, and I have sparred over RFK's influence on ballots he's going to pull away. Even if he pulls a little bit more away from Trump than he does from Biden, the problem for Democrats is that they don't have a base to chase. Because we're looking at, and the base to chase is really important. In the black community, we just were looking at these numbers. The polling numbers are showing that if you haven't ever voted in elections as a black American, you're about 35% likely to vote for Trump. Well, they can't just randomly pluck black people now to vote for Democrats. Young people now, the polling is showing that they are leaning more towards Trump than they are Joe Biden, and certainly towards RFK over Joe Biden. So they can't just pluck a young person now. So they're running out of groups to go chase votes, particularly in Arizona, Wisconsin, Georgia, other places, Nevada. And that's spells really bad things for them. So they have to do something extraordinarily radical to try to influence the election ahead of October. That's just my opinion. I just think that they have to do that at this point because the numbers are heading in the direction they're so bad.
And they raised a lot of money for a party, right?
They did. They did. I want to mention two things quick. First, someone in the comments is asking if you are a Freemason because you did something called the Triad Claw. I don't know what that is.
I'm not a Freemason. Yeah.
A more serious one. Someone does point out, and I think this is true, is I think the way that the frat bros are swerving, there's really a divide that is happening. He says it comes down to the left is cringe now. Their art is garbage. The left is boring. And I think on top of that, the left is, it's like visually disgusting.
Yeah.
The most appealing thing about these frat boys is you look at them with the flag and they're non-obese. They basically know how to dress properly. They have normal haircuts with normal hair colors. They don't have bizarre tattoos upon their face or upon their, you know, entire sleeve of their arm. And I think a real split, a real division that is coming in American politics is essentially the divide between people who, you know, if you made a photo of them black and white, it would look like a photo from the old times, and people who literally look like a goblin or an orc or some sort of CGI monstrosity. And in the long run, even though America has some bad trends, I think there's a lot of desire to have a society of normal-looking people who can live normal lives, yes, and be functional. Yeah.
So hold on. How long until the New York Times does a hit piece on those kids accusing them of impropriety?
Oh, they're going to be all over these kids. They're going to be all over
these kids. Even if they haven't already?
No, I'm not kidding. How long
they're going to be all over these
by
kids.
Monday morning, there'll be a hit piece saying that one of these kids said a racist joke or I guarantee
or,
it.
Or even accused if they do,
I don't think it'll
be
a rape
allegation.
Think
about what they did.
Yeah. No, I think
about
it'll
how
make
bad it was in, was it 2018 or 2019? The kids from Kentucky, I'm totally spacing
Covington
on them.
Kids.
Covington, the Covington
Nicholas cast. Sandman.
Like, all that they had of them was a video of them basically chanting USA or something like that and yep. smiling awkward, and one guy smiling awkwardly near that elder guy banging
Nicholas
a drum.
Nicholas Sandman.
And, well, I can't remember the elder's guy. Oh. Yeah, Nick Sandman was the kid. And they managed to just take the imagery of that, like the ability to just smear and essentially do character assassination on young white men was so strong. They could just take that video and whip people into a frenzy. And when you think about it, the clip we just showed is actually a lot like that. They show up and they surround some hideous protesters and chant USA and have a flag and kind of make a bit of a ruckus. And people love it. And they like can't even attempt to smear them over it anymore. And I do think that shows a pretty big shift.
Let's
on
let
its
Jack
own.
Get in here. Jack.
There's also, well, just to pick up where Blake left off, it is a huge shift, but I would argue that it's a shift that's been in the works for a decade at this point, because what are we one decade from? What happened 10 years ago in the summer of 2014 was the UVA rape hoax.
Yes.
The Rolling Stone case that came out, which really was the start of the Me Too movement, which was when so much of wokeness kicked off, when the wokes really took over, when Greek life was pretty much either destroyed or ultimately neutralized and cucked all across America. And now, like, the Me Too movement has crested. The wokeness has turned the corners, specifically in Hollywood and some of the other places, if you're looking closely. DEI is seen as a bad thing. CRT is pretty much defeated at this point. It's still limping on, but nobody's taking it seriously or really championing it in the public square. And now, all of a sudden, the frat boys are back. And the frat boys are asserting themselves on campuses and being applauded for asserting themselves on campus. And I said earlier on Twitter, the reintroduction of frat boys on campus is like the reintroduction of wolves to Yellowstone in order to rebalance the ecosystem.
Well, and like 10 years ago, too, Jack, was really the attacks on frat boy culture was because of the Me Too movement was really an attack on frat boy culture. And this is where And it's really interesting. This is in the womb of this was like Barstool was born as like this like alternative media and outside media because the world hated everything about these people. And so normal people, alternative media went to that type of a thing. And it was really looked at poorly, especially within normal culture on a college campus. These kids now, it's like Newton's pendulum. What do they call it? Where the pendulum swings back. What the thing is like the entire motion is coming back now where people are like, I am so sick and tired of seeing like this stuff I don't agree with that just like feels good with BLM, with everything else. Like these nasty, ugly, horrible human beings are just screeching at the top of their lungs on college campuses. And like these kids are just, again, I think the Sandman comparison is like they're just quietly standing there defending the flag, and some of them are quipping and saying some funny stuff, right? But like in general, like they're getting screamed at by these hordes of people that most Americans have no association with, and they can relate way more to the kids defending the flag, and that's a huge problem for the left.
Let's play cut 129. Megyn Kelly goes after the mutants.
And by the way, why are they so unattractive? I really legitimately want to know. Why are all the protesters so homely? I don't think they're unconnected. I'm not going to lie. I think attractive, smart people are not drawn to this nonsense. They're living their lives being successful. It's the unattractive and or dumb people who feel the need to do this to feel like they matter. Sorry.
No, you don't have to be sorry, Megan. That's totally true.
Yeah, well, I think it's also, as the saying goes, like nature abhors a vacuum. And there's so much nihilistic energy on the left of rip apart America, apart civilization. It there's so much joy of just literally frat bros who love America. And I do think that's something the right would do well to think of. Is I do think it's very easy for the right to fall into a lot of negativity. There are many things to be negative about. But the last Republican president who, you know, just kicked a huge amount of ass was Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan, whatever his pluses and minuses, one of his biggest strengths was he was a relentlessly positive person. He exuded positive vibes. And I do think we'd do well to cultivate that of just, oh yeah, frat bros who love America. We love the flag. It's great. Here's some stuff. These are the heirs of the guys who won World War II, whether that's literally true or not. And you'll get a lot of surprising allies that way, I think.
Well, I asked the question of somebody today. I was like, when you're comparing yourself to, because whenever we see the abortion rallies, who's out front? It's like the nasty, ugly, you know, super left. It's always a bunch of lesbians. I don't know why they care about abortion that much. We talk about this all the time. Like, why is it the lesbians that care most about abortion? They're the least likely to get fall pregnant into that trap, right? But you know, you look at all these people, and it's like people. Do you want one of those people as your next door neighbor? Do you want one of those people? What would you do if a fat, crazy lesbian showed up to, you know, fix your sink that was the plumber that showed? No, they're more likely to associate with people who are going to be the people who save you at that time. That's the doctor I want to see is one of the frat kids, right? That's the plumber I want to see that I'm calling because I have a leak in the middle of the night. Those are the people in the future that I want coaching my kids or teaching my kids. I don't trust the people that are screaming, you know, and throwing their hands in the air and trying to destroy the country. Like, I would never trust that for my society. And at some point, it's a very community driven thing.
I want to put that visual back up on screen here of the frat boys holding up the flag. You can see why this has resonated so much, because this is the image that you're supposed to hate. Look at all the things you're supposed to hate in one picture. You're supposed to hate the flag. You're supposed to hate that they're men. You're supposed to hate that they're standing up against a power structure, using their testosterone and using courage because they don't know how it's going to work out.
It's all dudes.
Right. I said they're men. Yeah. Right. You hate out that they're white. Right. You hate that they're part of a fraternity that doesn't allow women in there. They hate that. That picture is what you're supposed to be incensed about.
And when you're around sincere liberals, it really does come out. They are mentally unwell people because they actually do come unhinged at just imagery like that. They'll see that, and it causes a dark feeling in their stomach. They can't handle that. And I think it is a failure of the right to not highlight that as much as we can. These people are freak shows. They're weirdos.
Yes.
They're awful. This is one of the best reasons. You know, this is why you should run against HR departments. Everyone's been around an HR department, and they're, you know, not fully human beings in a lot of ways.
No, they're very human. We're kidding.
Are you saying if you work in an HR department, you shouldn't serve on a jury, Blake?
You know,
Toby Flinderson,
something like that. Also, one of our listeners, great inspiration, says, please stop calling these people kids. I hold to the principle that everyone at least 24 hours younger than me is a kid, and so I'm going to call them kids.
Well, no, I do want to talk about kids, actually, Blake, because there is a quick addendum to this that you and I were chatting about beforehand, and we were talking about not just colleges and the reintroduction of frat boys, but also about the reintroduction of bullies, in a sense, to sort of the high school, middle school culture. And so this is something where bullies were removed through anti-bullying programs. And because of this, what we get are, you know, these school programs where something goes wrong and someone says something and it all gets reported up to the teacher. It all gets reported up to the council. It all gets reported up to the principal. And nobody is actually ever dealing with conflict directly anymore. And so you teach people this learned helplessness of, oh, I can't, you know, deal with anything interpersonally or directly because there's no bullies to overcome. I've got to go complain and file the complaint and write a report about it, and it has to go to some committee rather than actually having people deal with things on their own. And I've said for years, this has led to stunted growth. And so I would support some reasonable, you know, reintroduction of bullies into the ecosystem, even at a younger level.
Here's just the craziest part about this entire thing with the defending the flag and everything else. It wasn't that many years ago, right, that we had like literally the left of the entire country worked up into a frenzy on kneeling for
Colin Kaepernick,
everything else. And the right now is, you know, busy doing idiotic stuff in Congress and everything else. Like, this is the perfect opportunity for leaders of this country to come out and say, wow, what an incredible job. Like, instead of like waiting for the New York Times to like attack these kids, give them a hero's welcome, talk about this and put this in the face of Americans and say, just a few years ago, we were kneeling on flags and throwing flags down on campus. And we have people, look how far this has gone. We have people, kids that were raised right, that are defending the flag. And this is what we should be doing. That's what we should be doing, leadership.
I want to tell you guys about the Wellness Company. It's an amazing kit, the Contagion Emergency Kit. The U.S. government has collaborated with Chinese scientists again on a project aimed at making certain strains of the avian flu more infectious and more deadly. And eyes are on the University of Wisconsin while they run gain-of-function research on this bird flu strain. Sound familiar? So what do we think will happen next? Well, someone gets infected with the bird flu, of course, and then shockingly, scientists begin saying that this particular bird flu strain could be 100 times worse than COVID. So how long until forced masks, forced lockdowns, forced vaccinations? Is this all to usher in the WHO pandemic treaty? We can speculate all day, but we do know is the medical tyrants are far from done with us. Do you have what your family needs this time around? Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. What about Tamiflu or a nebulizer? Most doctors won't even consider prescribing these, but we've got you covered. Keep listening. Americans are waking up and understanding that now more than ever, we need these life-saving medications on hand. The only of its kind, this prescription emergency kit from the Wellness Company provides you with a carefully selected assortment of effective medications for bird flu, COVID-19, and other respiratory illnesses. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. Every American should have at least one of these kits in their home, backed by research from experts like Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Harvey Risch. The Wellness Company's Contagion Emergency Kit is a must-have. So check it out right now at twc.health/CJ and use promo code CJ for 10% off plus free shipping at checkout. U.S. scientists are doing some bad stuff right now, so check it out and be prepared. What's our final topic here, Blake?
Well, we have two options. We could talk about the fertility crash, or we could talk about the bullet crashing into Christy Noem's dog's head.
I think the fertility one's a good. I mean, I think the dog thing. Let me just the dog thing. We could do very simply. I'll just read the Politico headline of Politico.com right now. Kristi Noem's VP chances appear as dead as the dog she killed. There are other reasons too. I think that's the end of the topic.
All I want to say is to defend the good people of my home state of South Dakota and also the related state of North Dakota. I think people do struggle to know what like the culture gap is like on actual like farm rural country. I wasn't sure, so I called my dad and I asked about this, and he said, you know, he grew up in rural North Dakota in a town of 400 people, and he said, we had a dog, it caused problems, and my dad would rather drive to the moon than drive to a vet and pay the vet money to do what he could do himself. And I think that's an attitude we've actually lost. We've become very used to not handling our own problems directly, and it's almost unsettling for us to see someone do it. That said, yeah, she's not going to be vice president anymore.
That's correct. You have a thought on killing dogs?
No, but I believe that dogs, people care more about dogs than they do kids.
Oh, of course.
In America, yeah. That's our next topic. Whole.
And that's a tragedy. It actually ties into fertility.
Right, which is this entire thing. And so, unfortunately, to be successful in politics, I don't think you should attack pets.
Well, but people would rather have pets than kids, and the fertility rate is the lowest it's ever been.
We're down to 1.62 on average births per woman in the United States in 2023, if you project outwards. That is the lowest level. They say lowest since 1979. Or it's the lowest number of babies since 1979. Yeah. I believe it is the lowest fertility rate ever recorded in the U.S. And it pairs with another interesting data point that we just looked up, because what I think is very common is, you know, with the populist right, is they'll present this as an economic problem. People are having fewer kids because housing is expensive, because they're getting these college degrees and they're in a ton of debt. And so it's all costly and difficult to have a family. But what I looked up and I found really interesting, and it's 132, yeah, it's on screen there, is if you look at the number of kids by income group, and you will see it is highest for people who have more money. But it's an extremely high amount of money. It's people making over $1 million per year. If you are making $500,000 to $1 million per year, you still have only about 1.85 kids. You're still having fewer kids than people who make $25,000 a year. The lowest number of kids is in the group of people who are making over $200,000. Even they're having less than people who make half as much as they do. And so I feel like we talk a lot about the economic reasons people don't have kids, but I think we're struggling to grapple with the real phenomenon, which is we have kind of culturally killed off the idea of having large families. People don't want to have kids, and it's going to destroy America.
Jack, why is this the case?
Well, for the higher end, I think there's obviously more access to fertility treatments like IVF and surrogacy. You got people like Elon Musk that are doing everything they can to break the trend of low fertility rates. But so here's what's really interesting, and I asked Blake to actually look this up earlier, is that the rate of people for families who have children is relatively steady. It's gone lower and has ticked up. It was gone from like 2.3 in the 1960s, went down to 1.8. I don't think it ever broke under 1.8, but now it's back up to 1.94. So for families who choose to have kids, is what I'm talking about, the rate has been somewhat steady. The rate that's increased is the families that have decided to no longer have kids, or people who are not getting married in general. So you've got a rise of something that's completely new in America, the DINK couple, so double income, no kids, and then also the rise of simply, or I should say the decline in marriage rates. And so you've got, this is really something where I know there's a lot of people who want to run around and just point to one thing and say, oh, it's video games, or oh, it's weed, or oh, it's porn, or oh, it's easy access to abortion. And the real, you know, it's women's liberation, it's the 19th Amendment. The real answer is it's actually a lot of factors. It's a lot of factors combined. One thing that I do think we should talk about, though, is economy, because it's certainly something that gets left out of the conversation a lot. Economy does play a role, as does, by the way, the high levels of immigration that America is currently receiving. High levels of immigration lead to downward pressure on wages, downward and upward pressure on the housing market. This, in turn, makes it harder for people to have money on in terms of real wages, and it makes that it gives us the housing crisis that we are currently in. And so AOC, I remember, made this point, and a lot of people make this point all the time in the immigration debate. They say we need more immigrants. Elon Musk says it all the time, even though I've been correcting him and he's getting better at it. They keep saying we need more immigrants because the birth rate is down, but they're not actually assessing the fact that the high immigration rate is actually depressing our birth rate.
That's right.
I think what actually a reason that that is the case is I think really high. When you have really high immigration and you can see the community around you changing extremely rapidly, it sort of it breaks the cultural script that you live in.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting phenomenon because we can sort of see this. They've tried to study this in individual like villages in India, because you'll have villages in India that have like high birth rates and ones that have very low birth rates. And it's like when you break up the narratives that give society its force. And so I think it's actually probably lots of diversity, lots of change, technological and social and so on. It makes people feel detached from everything. They don't get what their role in the world is. And it's that feeling of having a role in a greater whole that makes you want to perpetuate it and makes you pair off with someone and have a family and keep it all going. And we've sort of blown that up. And you just are an atomized person. And when you live in that and you feel like you're not living for anything, it's very easy to just check out and say, yeah, what matters most is like have a lot of fun and then, you know, punch your ticket out.
Well, and I think
Final thought, Tyler. Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think social media plays such a role into that. I think Instagram alone has, I don't know what the rates look like since Instagram like came out, but like with women who generally wear the pants in the relationship when it comes to determining when births are going to happen. I hear they have a big part in that. They play a big part in that. Don't ask a liberal, but you know, that's the big thing. They're on Instagram. You have your women in America in pocketed communities. They're looking at everything that everybody else says, every other family does. And, you know, knowing their role in society, in a family, in their own community, I think is really interesting. It's like part of that conversation.
We'll pick this up next week, guys. Thank you so much. Make sure you guys subscribe to the Rumble channel and subscribe to our podcast. Till next week, keep on committing thought crimes, and we'll see you next week. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.